You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, January 9th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Laura Clausen, labor reporter from Daily Kos, as Indiana, in the manufacturing center of our country, one of those states there. I don't know if that's technically the Rust Belt. Nearly rusty belt. Attacking unions. And may very well be successful today in doing so. Also on the program today, Occupy Wall Street gearing up for Occupy Congress. That story on income mobility that we didn't get to, which is really so damning to the notion that we live in a meritocracy. Scott Walker's close buddies been arrested on felony charges. Investigation not over. And yes, we will talk about the Republican clown car race. I still contend, ladies and gentlemen, that no one is going to win the Republican primary. I know it's not possible in the way that we perceive politics, but I do think it's possible this year that the Republican Party may just show up sometime around their convention and just say to the country, sorry, just can I take an incomplete? We just could not get it together this year. Tomorrow is the New Hampshire primary. I don't know who's going to win. Well, Romney's going to win. But the question is, how anemically will he win? It'll be the last time that we talk about Huntsman. Because though he will do well, it's the last state he will do well in. No one will take him seriously either. Santorum will do okay. Ron Paul will do okay. Then it will head down to South Carolina, where apparently Newt Gingrich has gotten a $5 million gift from a buddy of his, a right-wing Likudnik, who just loves the fact that Newt Gingrich talks about his Islamophobia so much. And apparently they just hate Romney. Mitt Romney's going to win this primary. I would say there's a 70, 80, 90% chance. But he's going to lose in the sense that he's going to come out of this primary battle just so battered and bruised and against a field of morons. And here's why. Because Mitt Romney, and it's just not clear because he's on this stage with a bunch of freaks. It's not clear how much of a freak he is. Now, I know this clip is out of context. And I don't even know what the context is. And so I'll say right up front, it's probably not fair. But what's so funny is that this is the way that politics are played. And you can see Mitt Romney, as soon as this comes out of his mouth, just in his mind going like, I screwed up again. Here it is. This is just, it's too funny.
Here's the clip.
It also means that if you don't...
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. Here is the clip. He is up in New Hampshire. He's at a Radisson. I know this because it's on the podium. It's probably the Manchester Radisson. Maybe it's not Manchester. I don't know. It doesn't even matter where it is. Because when this gets used in campaign ads, you know, when he just listen to this. It's so funny.
It also means that if you don't like what they do, you can fire them. I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
What did I just say? Did I just say I like firing people? Now watch. As Mitt Romney, like you can see it on his face. There's this look of terror. And he's like, I can't believe I just said that. I'm the guy who made millions of dollars off of buying companies, stripping them of their pensions, destroying their workforce, destroying towns, and selling off the carcass and make money off of this, and actually got taxed at a reduced rate because of it. And here he is. Here he is. Now, this is, listen to the way he scrambles out of this now. This is hilarious.
But, you know, if someone doesn't give me the good service I need, I want to say, you know, that I'm going to go get someone else to provide that service to. And so that's one thing I change.
It's just about service. Don't we hate service companies, folks? I mean, isn't that really what it's about? Forget about the firing. I never said that. Poor Mitt Romney. Poor Mitt Romney. All right, folks, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Laura Claussen of The Daily Kos. And she will be telling us about the attempts by people like Mitt Romney, essentially, to destroy unions in Indiana. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Laura Claussen, labor reporter at the Daily Kos at dailykos.com. Laura, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, give me a little bit of background on this Indiana attack on unions. I know it was happening last year when Scott Walker was attacking unions in Wisconsin and it was beat back. But what's happened since then?
Basically, what happened is last year, Indiana Democrats fled the state to avoid giving Republicans a quorum that they needed to pass this bill. Republicans came back this year to their new legislative session saying this is our top priority. And in the meantime, they had passed a bill saying that if Democrats flee the state, they get fined $1,000 a day.
Nice. Nice work on their part. And so what exactly is the bill?
It's what's called a right to work bill, which is a terrible name. I mean, it's one of these Republicans' names that they come up with things. Actually, what it says is that workers who don't want to belong to a union don't have to pay for their share of being represented. In other states, workers who don't want to belong to a union don't have to, even if they work in a union workplace, but they pay a share of the fees to cover the union's expenses in bargaining contracts, in representing them in grievances. In so-called right-to-work states, they don't even have to pay that, but the union continues to have to represent them. So
in other words,
it's
they don't
a free
pay,
rider law.
They won't pay full union dues, but they'll pay a small percentage, which, because of the union's bargaining power, comes back to them in spades anyways in terms of money.
Exactly.
And I guess benefits and worker protections. Mm-hmm. And what are the material effects of this? I mean, it's not just about freeing freeloaders, essentially, to get free representation in the workplace. What are the implications of these so-called right-to-work laws?
Well, so basically, it weakens unions in the state. It means that they have, you know, they're not getting the money that they need to represent workers. That means that they can't do other things that they would normally do. It means they're less likely to try to organize workers in the state. So overall, it weakens unions in the state that it's passed in. And that allows employers to drive down wages and working conditions for everyone.
Right. I mean, a piece that you put up on Daily Kos, I guess, over the weekend, stated a couple of different studies that showed that unionization drives dropped by 30% in the following 5 years of the passing of these legislations. Organizing wins fell by 46%. Wages drop. The portions of free riders ranges from 9% to 39%. In certain states. I mean, so this is really clearly an attempt to destroy unions. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, what Republicans say in trying to push these laws is, well, it might not be good for unions, but it's good for workers because it brings more jobs to the state. But that's actually not true either.
And I mean, there's a lot of data to show that companies just don't move to these states. I mean, to the extent that they do, it would be illegal in some respects, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you have cases where companies do move explicitly for that, but in most cases, what we see as far as companies moving into right-to-work states is that most of the right-to-work states are southern states that are warm and that have big, cheap immigrant populations. So studies, you know, reasonable studies show that the reasons that companies move to these states, to the extent that they even do, which is far overblown, is for things not at all related to labor law.
And you know, we should remind people, too, that this notion that somehow unions are forcing these people to engage in the union activities is, you know, you're also, when you work for a corporation, you're also forced to engage in their activities. Right. I mean, right. You've got to go to there's a lot of things that the corporation, when you work for them, makes them do. I mean, the idea that you're forced into a situation where you have more bargaining power as a worker is not terribly oppressive. So what is the status? Last week, tell me what the state of play is in Indiana right now.
In Indiana, the Republicans have enough votes in the Senate. They don't need Democrats to even have a quorum. So they got it through a Senate committee, and it will be going to the full Senate for a vote. Interestingly, there was a Republican defection on that Senate committee, so Republicans are not united on this. In the House, Democrats can prevent a quorum, and they had been staying out. They hit the 3 days that they're allowed to stay out before they start getting fined $1,000 a day. And on Friday afternoon, a few Democrats sort of trickled back. So the question is, are there more Republican votes that can be flipped against it, or the minute Democrats show back up so that they don't lose their houses to these fines, do Republicans just ram it through?
Wow. And how many Democrats are out? In other words, like, are we talking about $3,000 a day or $50,000 a day?
There are, I believe, 37 Democrats in the Indiana House. And there's 40. So
$40,000 a day.
Right. Right.
This is not numbers that would be easy for people to raise on behalf of these people.
Right. And then the thing is that all of the Democrats don't need to go back to allow Republicans a quorum. Only 7 of them need to go back. So, you know, you really have to hold a united front to make this work.
And what's happening in terms of, like, protests against this? I mean, I remember last time Indiana was pretty active in terms of protests. Are people rebelling against this in any way?
Absolutely. You know, people have been flooding the state house every day. The Republicans actually tried to limit the numbers of protesters that could be allowed in the state house and had to go back on that after some bad publicity. But,
Do you get bad publicity for limiting the size of protests in Indiana? You can do that here. You can actually, in New York City, you can actually cordon off an entire block and say it's a protest-free zone. If the mayor or somebody really wealthy lives near there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how concerned Indiana Republicans were about this, because they really tried to go for it. They said, you know, lobbyists and everyone else can go in, but then only a certain number of the general public can go in.
Right.
So I think that was part of it. They were saying that lobbyists could go in, but not, you know, people who wanted to talk to their legislators.
They should look into income tests. You need to make a certain amount of money every year to actually show up. Now, one thing that's interesting about this, that's creating sort of an interesting dynamic, is my sense is that the Republicans are sort of are fast tracking this because there's an event coming up in February that may put more pressure on them.
Yeah, something you might have heard of called the Super Bowl is
right.
going to be held in Indianapolis. And, of course, NFL players are union members. They had their own labor dispute with a lockout this past year. So they've released a statement saying that they oppose this law. And, you know, yes, so Indiana Republicans would prefer to have this over and done with before a bunch of very high-profile union members arrive in town.
I'd love to see Tom Brady, when he's down there playing with the Patriots in the Super Bowl this year, be able to speak out on this. I guess it's still they've got to still win a couple more races. So, I mean, games. So
fingers crossed.
Yes. So when will we know what the outcome is? I mean, it's basically this dynamic of how long can the Democrats stay out with this $1,000 fine over their heads.
Right, exactly. How long can they stay out, and is there any chance of enough Republicans flipping their votes to prevent the bill from going through? And if that chance exists, then it becomes a lot more worth it for Democrats to stay out for a few days while pressure gets put on those Republicans. If there's no chance, I mean, why are they going to rack up these fees to delay it a few more days?
How hard is it to reverse these type of bills, and do you think there's any potential in the future to do so?
It would require taking the Indiana, you know, electing a Democratic majority in Indiana, which has not happened in quite some time. So it has happened in the past that a bill has been passed and then overturned. But just based on the electoral realities in Indiana right now, it's unlikely.
Are there any specific industries that are really pushing this, or is this just sort of like the Republicans are just want to be anti-labor?
This is really a Republican wish list. I mean, you don't actually see companies coming forward and saying, we'd totally move jobs there if it was right to work. It doesn't happen.
Wow. All right. Laura Clausen from Daily Kos Labor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Really
for
appreciate
having
it. We'll keep our eye on this as it continues.
Definitely.
We got to take a break, folks. When we come back, I will add a story about what Occupy Bloomington is doing in terms of labor rights in Indiana. And the story on the lack of income mobility in this country. Also, it seems like Pat Buchanan may not be around at MSNBC very much longer. So I may contemplate coming out with my white supremacy book, see if I can fill that slot over there. I don't know if that's a good strategy. We'll see. I got to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
I turned my feelings on the side. Yeah, yeah. Like I'm gonna ignite. stars go off. I saw them stars go off tonight.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Last week, I guess at the end of last year, it was reported by the New York Times that U.S. manufacturing is actually gaining jobs, but wages are retreating. In other words, you do the work that your father may have done in these factories, but you get paid closer to what your kid gets at McDonald's. And we see stories this coming from particularly Louisville, Kentucky, but we're going to see it in Indiana as well. You're almost guaranteed, statistically speaking, that when you become a right-to-work state, I think there are about 22 right-to-work states now in this country, that wages for manufacturing will go down significantly. You've got wages at this General Electric plant in Louisville. They've moved it back from China, partially because Chinese labor costs are going up, partially because General Electric may be finding it cheaper with oil prices to have the stuff here. Wages are $10 to $15 less an hour for newcomers, and they top out much quicker. And basically, you know what this dynamic is? The workers are pissed about it, but what are they going to do? They're lucky to have a job. This is the leverage. This is the leverage that you get. So, I mean, if you wonder why, when the Fed ignores its dual mandate of maintaining lowest possible unemployment as well as lowest possible inflation, why they're only focusing on the lowest possible amount of inflation. And this is even with core inflation dropping. If you wonder why there's no panic amongst the elite, no demands that the Fed follow its dual mandate, well, it's quite simple. Because it reaps benefits. There's nothing like a couple of years, 3, 4, 5, even 10 years of massive unemployment for the elite to drive down wages. William Madsen, 62, earning $31.78 an hour after 42 years at Appliance Park. Attempted an explanation. The younger workers still get annual raises, he noted. But by the time they top out, he and his peers, the oldest baby boomers, won't be here any longer to remind them of what they're missing. It's a fantastic strategy. Linda Thomas, 37, one of the first to be hired in 2005 under the new arrangement, amends that explanation. Her hourly wage, $18.19, is almost topped out, though it is nearly $14 an hour less than Madsen's. But she keeps silent. Too many unemployed people, she explained, would clamor for her job and her wage if she were to protest. You don't want to rock the boat, Thomas said. You take a chance on losing everything you have if you do. You know what that's called, folks? Freedom. That is what a libertarian, our buddy Andrew Schiff, right? They just got to take a lower wage if they want a job. That's what freedom is. Freedom is to have your kids' health care, the capacity to put food on the table for your children, the idea that you have a roof under your head, to have all that threatened if you attempt to get a better wage. It's freedom when you don't have that power. And the corporation has all the power in the world to make you work for peanuts. That's freedom. And if you don't love freedom, you can go out and go to China, where they don't have as much freedom. In fact, actually, based upon that calculus, in China, they have more freedom because their wages are even less. And this type of stuff coming soon to a an Indiana near you as they destroy more unions. I mean, even unions are capitulating to these decreased wages because they have no, they don't have the same leverage. They're losing leverage. Every time you lose a union, you lose leverage across the board. Meanwhile, in Indiana, it was a strike by 50 mill workers at the Indiana Limestone Company that has been taking place since November 15th. Members of the local 8093 Carpenters Industrial Council in Oolitic, Indiana. The company, of course, was once family-owned. It's now it's owned by a Bain Capital type of private equity firm. Management wants to cancel basic seniority rights. They want to end the notion that they have to fire for just cause. They want to end the safety meetings that take place to protect their workers, on and on and on. And Occupy Bloomington has been essentially marching the picket lines with these people. Occupiers have escalated their actions against the Resilience. This is the private equity firm, with tents pitched at the plant entrance and rising militancy on the picket line and elsewhere. Members of Local 8093 are blocking plant entrances, while occupiers have engaged in corporate campaigning. And it is, again, building this alliance between old-time union members and occupiers. And this is an important alliance. And as we go forward, next week we're going to see Occupy the Congress. But over the weeks to come, we're going to see, and months to come, I think we're going to see more of this alliance between labor and workers and occupiers. And I think it's essential. Next week, there'll be solidarity events for J17, which will be the fourth month anniversary of the Occupy movement. If you go to occupyyourcongress.info, I believe it is, you can see what groups are already intending to do, either send protesters or hold local protests in solidarity. Albuquerque, Athens, Austin, Baltimore, Boston, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, Chapel Hill, Chicago, Cleveland, Coachella Valley, California, Miami, Hemet, Harrisburg, Greensboro, Nashville, Philly, Pittsburgh, Queens, New Haven, St. Paul, San Francisco, Ventura, Western Michigan, Wilmington, York, Occupy Oklahoma, Occupy Oregon, Occupy Army, Occupy Caucuses, Occupy Disabled. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And it's looking like I'm not going to be able to get down there because I got to go down Thursday and Friday of that week to a healthcare conference that I'm covering for Ring of Fire. I'll be doing the show. And so tomorrow on the program, Jeff Smith is going to be heading down there from Occupy Wall Street. You know Jeff. And we're going to try and raise some funds for him to go down there. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Now, update, did my wife... We've had a couple of great calls in the better half of the program. Did my wife call during the show or in the after show? In the better half.
In the better half.
Yeah, I got slammed by my wife. I mean, it was, it cuts both ways. One, I think it's the first time she ever listened to the program.
Oh, yeah, she didn't call to slam him about something that happened at home.
No. No, it was encouraging. She called me to tell me, and it's an interesting dilemma, and over the months, of course, we will be talking about it. But she said, you know that Obama is better than the Republicans. I agree. You know that there does not appear to be another candidate who you're going to have an option to vote for come November 2nd or 5th or wherever that day is. I agree. So you have a responsibility as someone who has a large audience, or any audience. In this case, it's not huge, but it's fairly large. It's not a radio audience, but it's pretty large for a podcast. You have a responsibility to do everything you can to make sure that he gets elected. And then I hung up on her. I didn't hang up on her, did I? But it's a debate that we'll have over. I mean, that's one of the benefits of this program is that it's not a radio audience. I imagine I may feel more pressure to do that on a radio audience. I'm not sure. If I had an everyday radio audience, maybe. I don't know. Republicans are so pathetic in themselves. And frankly, I'm much more excited about what's happening with Occupy. So I don't know. But in the context of this show, we have a audience that is in the five figures as opposed to six figures. We don't have hundreds of thousands of people listening. I mean, we have.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, it's general. We don't have hundreds of thousands of people listening. And the people who do listen to this program, frankly, we attempt to weed you out. And if you're not savvy about politics, we don't want you. Because this show is as much for me at times as it is for you. For me to work out some political issues and to have an opportunity to talk to very smart people about politics. And so we have a higher caliber of audience on this program who listen to a lot more of the program than would on radio. You know, radio, the whole thing is you hold people over a 17-minute mark. That's it. You get your ratings. You take it up. You roll it up. You go home. It's a different thing. Tomorrow on the program, we will have Rocky Anderson. He is running on the Justice Party ticket, I believe it is.
Yes.
And I'm interested to hear what he has to say. I don't even know if he'll be on the ballot. But why not listen to other voices? I trust in you people to make up your own mind as to who you're going to vote for. And I don't think that there's much that I can say that can get you to go out and knock on doors. Been there, done that. But, you know, you see a guy like Mitt Romney, and, you know, you think, what a douche. Can I say that? In other words, excuse me, I have a little bit less. He's a deuce. He's a twofer. He's both a liar and a one percenter. I love, and an idiot. I love to fire people. What? Oh, my God. Did I just say that? I can't wait until Mitt Romney is forced to actually release his taxes. I mean, you know he's got a team of forensic auditors right now trying to figure out how can we make it not look bad that Mitt Romney made all this money in shutting down businesses, destroying towns, destroying people's lives, got a federal bailout. A federal bailout, ladies and gentlemen. I have the details right here in my hand. This is just unbelievable. Back in the early 1990s, Bain and Company, the company that has for, you know, we don't know his tax, but for at least 10 years after 1999, paid him out millions of dollars as part of his golden parachute, I guess, which he was taxed at only 15%. You know that capital gains tax where you're supposed to invest money and you get money back? Well, he didn't invest this money. It's called carried interest. It's the same thing on hedge fund. He's basically just getting a commission off of money of his clients that he invested into companies that they went and shut down and sold off all the assets. And so he's paying less taxes on that $1 million a year or whatever it was than you are paying if you work at McDonald's, or a lower tax rate, I guess, if you're the manager of McDonald's. If you're making 60 grand a year, Mitt Romney paying the same amount of taxes on that. And back in the early 1990s, in 91, this comes from Jed Lewison, a Daily Kos. He convinced the federal government to forgive $10 million in debts owed by Bain and Company. According to the Boston Globe in 1994, Republican Senate nominee Mitt Romney. Those were the ads that were back in Boston at that time. Rescue of a business consulting firm was achieved in part by convincing the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Company Corporation, to forgive roughly $10 million of the company's debts. Romney, whose business acumen has been the cornerstone, of his campaign, has said saving the Bain and Company Consulting from the brink of bankruptcy in 91 was the accomplishment that most convinced him he had the mettle to be a U.S. senator. I know how to extract money from the federal government. That proves I've got what it takes to become a U.S. senator. So, of the $10 million that he got in his golden parachute, at least, some of that would probably be your tax dollars. And you also have one of his advisors, apparently, was also at the National Labor Relations Board during the George Herbert Walker Bush's reign, and had actually fined two companies that were owned by Bain Capital. That guy is now one of Mitt Romney's advisors. I mean, does it really get any more pathetic than this? And this is why, despite the fact that Mitt Romney is probably going to win the Republican nomination, why I think really nobody's going to win. I don't know if you've seen this video that MoveOn put out with these two steel workers. It's pretty devastating. It's 2 minutes long, though. I don't think we're going to play it, but we'll put it on our blog at majority.fm. Greg Sargent talked to one of the guys in this from Kansas City in the steel mill. It was acquired by Bain Capital. You can see the video to hear the story. It was acquired by Bain Capital. It laid off 750 workers. Bain required... And this is part of the calculation, folks. You know, there are people who suggest that when Cerberus, is that the name of it, bought Chrysler, they knew that a bailout was coming. They knew that the U.S. government would never allow something so important to the manufacturing base of this country to go under. That was built into their calculations as a holding company. That was built into their bottom line. We're going to spend X much. We can expect this much of a government bailout. Well, undoubtedly, when Bain came in, reversed the severance pay for workers, got rid of their health insurance, destroyed their pension benefits. They also had a federal government insurance agency bail out the company's pension plan. Bain ended up raking in millions and millions of dollars of profits. So there was a guy who worked at the plant for 34 years, is a self-described conservative. His name is Glenn Patrick Wells. He lives in Peculiar, Missouri. He agreed to be in this MoveOn.org video. This will give you a sense. He worked for 34 years in the steel mill. Greg Sargent spoke to Wells. He has switched back and forth from Republican to independent, says he voted for George W. Bush for president in 2000 and 2004. He voted for McCain in 2008. But he hates Romney. He says he's open to appearing in more spots against Romney for Obama or for MoveOn. And this is the quote. This is unbelievable. Right now, if Romney gets in, I am so disgusted that I will probably vote for Obama. And I detest him. Anyone who is willing to put a predatory capitalist in office deserves to get Obama. That's stunning. The guy detests Obama. I don't know if there's a word for his feelings for Mitt Romney. And that's exactly what the Obama campaign is hoping for. And for those of us on the left, I don't know that we have any cards to play beyond taking it to the Obama administration, the lesser of these two evils. But that's the Obama campaign in a nutshell, folks. We may not be so great, but that guy, he's horrible. I mean, horrible. As in, this horrible.
You can fire them. I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
There you go. All right, folks. We'll see you in the better half of the program. You can call us at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We're anticipating Ross Broccoli calling in on his way to New Hampshire to campaign for Ron Paul, I guess. Last week, my wife called in as a surprise. We also took a cold call from Verizon, spoke to them about the National Defense Authorization Act. Who knows who will call in today? It's impossible to know. And you will only find out if you are a member of the Majority Report at majority.fm. We need your memberships. It's the beginning of the year. People having some financial troubles. We've got some cancellations. We need some new members. You can also support this show by buying your Amazon crap through our Amazon link, buying justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. We've got merch. Head to majority.fm. You can check it out there. You hit the support the show button. You'll find all that stuff. See you in the better half.